advertises will reconvene. We're at item 4E, California Department of Fish and Wildlife. I think Mr. Michael Harris is coming up somewhere.
Calm down, please.
California Department of Fish and Wildlife. Mr. Harris. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I think we got the mic working again.
I was told to turn it off.
He's getting there. Hang tight. You can take it off if it's easier for you as well.
I'm pretty loud. Does that work for everybody?
Yep.
Okay. Here we go.
Thank you, Chairman Kopsev. Members.
Okay, let's keep it down, please.
In mind.
Thank you, Chairman Kopsev, board members, for inviting the department here today. As you know, the Klamath Dam Removal Project is the largest dam removal project in U.S. history.
Michael Harris, California Department of Fish and Wildlife.
The project is an opportunity to restore the health of the Klamath River. It once hosted many of the most prestigious salmon runs in California. And this project will restore over 420 miles of habitat. I'd like to address four topics today: drawdown and terrestrial wildlife, impacts to reservoir fisheries, parcel B lands, and water quality. In response to recent reports of deer and other animals being trapped in sediments exposed by the drawdown of Copco and Iron Gate reservoirs, the department has increased staff in the cut area of Copco and Iron Gate reservoirs. We're monitoring the reservoirs every day specifically for the detection of wildlife. We have staff on call who have wildlife-related rescue experience who can respond and evaluate emergency wildlife situations. We're answering any concerns directly to our red headquarters main phone number and primary email address every day for alerts and notifications about any wildlife that may be trapped or distressed in the project area. We've installed flagellary, essentially colored and reflective fabric straps that blow in the wind in locations around Copco to ensure wildlife that were determined by our wildlife biologists. Since the department has initiated these measures last month, there have been no more incidents or reports that we are aware of involving any additional deer being stuck in the reservoir footprints of Copco. We recognize that the deer loss is very sad and very unfortunate. 10 deer died, 2 of which had to be euthanized. And we know how much the Copco community enjoys and values those deer. Wildlife was expected to be impacted by the drawdowns, but the impacts were faster and to more deer than we expected. It's important to remember that the deer herds here in Siskiyou County are very resilient, healthy, and their populations overall remain stable. Resident deer populations and migratory herds continue to use the area as winter range, and the number of deer observed through our annual survey show consistency over the past couple of years. With regard to wildlife rescue, the department is asking that the public not try and rescue wildlife entrenched in the sediments. Wildlife rescue in situations like this involves a balance between the ability to complete successful rescue and health and human safety concerns. We also ask the Copco community residents not to feed the deer or leave water out for the deer. Providing the food and water for the deer attracts the deer and keeps them in the area around the reservoir, and it exposes them to greater risks and dangers. If you see wildlife in distress, please call the department at 530-225-2300. Impacts to reservoir fishes. The department is aware of the mortality that has occurred in the reservoir footprints. Many of the fish species were non-native, including largemouth bass, yellow perch, bluegill, catfish. These non-native fish species are typically associated with reservoir environments. When we transitioned over to the riverine environment, there was expected to be substantial population losses and being eliminated altogether. However, the decline in non-native fish is expected to benefit native fish, including trout, salmon, and steelhead. CDF plans to closely monitor fish populations following removal of the dams to understand the impacts and inform future management actions. The department is also aware that fish mortality has occurred below dam restoration reach, as was anticipated as part of the drawdown action. Parcel B lands. Parcel B lands are currently held by KRC, and restoration actions will likely keep many of the parcels with KRC for several years and remain closed as restoration actions are carried out. Parcel B lands will then either be transferred to the state of California or other entities, and the department will work with potential entities to discuss recreation and other issues such as fuels reduction, invasive weed management, but cannot forecast at the time what our access or management will occur. There are three recreation sites proposed for Iron Gate and Kafka Reservoir areas, including the facility at Iron Gate, a facility near Fall Creek, and expansion of the Kapku Day use area. Sediment evacuation was expected to be most severe short-term impact, with the magnitude and duration primarily influenced by water year type. As part of dam removal planning and environmental review, hydraulic and sediment transport models were developed by the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation and further updated by the Klamath River Renewal Corporation to analyze background conditions and predict suspended sediment concentrations, sediment transport, and river conditions. In real time, the U.S. Geological Survey is monitoring water quality at 9 continuous water quality monitoring stations spanning from Oregon to near the mouth of the Klamath River, as well as the 9 locations where grab samples are also being taken. What we're seeing is what we expected to, what we're seeing was expected to occur, and turbidity is going down, but it will continue to fluctuate based on storm events and other actions related to dam removal.
Do you want me to answer your question?
Yeah, well, okay. I've got a few public comments first. Chrissy Reynolds, are you still here? I think I've got you on this one. Yes, E.
Sir.
Yeah, come on up here.
Oh, you mean to move? I'm sorry.
You're okay.
No. So in regards to parcel, I'm Chrissy Reynolds, Kapko Lake. In regards to the parcel B lands, the option to any resident or property owner what was never given for people to buy the land to continue to allow them to have access to the water, that was never an option. And I'm curious as to if that is an option. I know that the Wildlife Conservation Board is seeking to buy up all of the other properties. And I'm thinking and guessing that's one of the other entities that you were talking about as far as the state goes, which Chuck Bonham is the head of CDFW, and yet he's also on the board of the Wildlife Conservation Board. As a resident here, I mean, reason why we, our parents and grandparents and, you know, other people bought here was so that we could have access to the water. We want to make sure that our rights as citizens that live here still have access to the water that we've been historically able to access, not just for fishing and recreation. The concerns have been known, I don't know if this is part of CAL FIRE or OES or whatever, but you know, with increased traffic just on the reservoir itself, but increased traffic gonna be on the river, you know, what protections do property owners have if somebody decides to get out of their raft and then, you know, hike up to the shoreline, you know? Are we now at risk to increased vandalism, increased loss of our enjoyment to our land and our private use of our land? And then, I don't know, I just have so many questions in regards to the wildlife. The pelicans are gonna be showing up here very soon. The turkey vultures are gonna be showing up here very soon. And they're going to get here, and I know this is part of your guys' plan, but you know, they didn't have any clue that this is part of the plan. They're going to show up here, and they're not going to have a place to have their breeding grounds, their summering grounds, their access to food has been completely decimated, and just all, for all of the native or the migratory birds that are lost because of the Upper Tule Lake reservoirs. We've just eliminated the last bits of open water of the Pacific Flyway.
Thank you. William Simpson.
Sorry. Hello, okay. My name is William Simpson. I'm a rancher down in Kopko. So with regard to parcel B lands, okay, so these sediments, I'm not aware of anybody testing the sediments themselves for heavy metals. We have water samples downriver that show chromium at, like I said, 178 times above EPA limits for chromium. Okay, those sediments are going to turn to dust this summer. Spreading seeds on the surface, any good farmer knows, or rancher, you got to drill seed in, and that's if you got good soil. This is microcrystalline clay. It's low pH. It's contaminated with, it's heavy in nitrates and phosphates right off the get-go, coming down out of Klamath Lake from the dirt poop and the phosphates. And then there's, of course, soil amendments from the Klamath Basin added in, and then we have all these heavy metals that nobody so far has said, KRRC, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife, California Wildlife, nobody is testing for mercury, arsenic, barium, cadmium, chromium, lead. They're all off the charts, according to Nielsen Lab, from the aqueous solution that was tested down at the Klamathon Bridge. So the sediment level is going to be much higher. That's just a fact. I don't hear California Fish and Wildlife talking about, what about our livestock? The livestock here have had access to water in either the river or the lakes after the lakes were set up for time immemorial, going all the way back to when this county was settled. This is open range. The livestock water has to be addressed. RES and other people, KRC, said they were going to, if they did diversionary fencing, they would provide alternative water sources. That hasn't been done. Summer's coming. The creeks and springs are going to dry up. The livestock are going to come down, and they're going to challenge those fences. That's a big problem. You only see what you test for. You know, everybody keeps talking about their tests, but when you ask them, are you testing for all these heavy metals? When you ask people on KRRC in the fish and game, what are you testing for? They're not testing for these heavy metals. The only metal I've heard about so far today is aluminum, okay? These other metals, they're going to get into the fish. The fish come down out of the tributaries. Right now, the Klamath River is loaded with these heavy metals, and they're going to continue eroding out of the probably 50 to 60 million metric yards of anthropogenically polluted clay that are loaded with these heavy metals. They're going to come out of the lake bottom. Every time it rains, it's going to erode and leach into the river every winter. So these fish coming up or out of the tributaries are going to get hammered by these heavy metals. Then the birds eat them and die. I mean, and you can't eat these fish once they get into this stuff. As far as the deer population, this is inconsistent. I hope you don't hammer me on my time. As far as the deer populations, this mic keeps going out.
We can hear you.
Okay. As far as the deer populations in California, in our county, California is down, according to Deer Friendly, at least 1.5 million deer or more. This is a critical wintering deer habitat up here. And our deer population is not as reported, okay? Anecdotal data was taken from an area just to the east of Grenada out there, and that data is not consistent with what the real deer populations are. California is down about 1.5 to 2 million deer in the last 30 years. That's a fact. Oregon's down 500,000. That's a fact. So there's a lot of things here that are inconsistent, and we're not seeing transparency, we're not seeing proper mitigation, we're not seeing fallback plans like Supervisor Hall talks about. What are we going to do about hexavalent chromium in the dust?
Please, Mr. Simpson, thank you.
Thank you.
Do you want to check this mic, please?
No, it's not working good.
Yeah. Richard Marshall's next.
Just be very careful by the cord.
Okay, thank you. I'll try to go that way.
How's that? I'll get out of your way.
Chairman and members of the board, my name is Richard Marshall. I'm president of Siskiyou County Water Users Association and also a rancher in the Fort Jones area. And I wanted to talk in particular about the fish, because on Sunday, my wife and I traveled down from Iron Gate down along the river, and we took photographs, and we got out of the car, especially at KRC campground, which I invite our KRC folks here to go down to and take a look at. The turbidity in the water, it smells like death as you approach the water, and there's all kinds of dead fish life, crawdads, etc. And the river reminds me of Mount St. Helens. When Mount St. Helens, we saw those pictures of the mud flowing down from that area. So I wanted to, in particular, suggest maybe the Fish and Wildlife Service should change its name to the Ministry of Death and Wildlife, because that's a river of death, literally. Everything is dying, and everything around it, including the trees and so on to get their water from that river, are going to die. It's going to reach all the way to the bay, to the mouth of the river. It's moving there. It's not there already. It's moving that way. And it's going to continue, as we've talked about before. But I wanted to mention a couple other issues in connection to this. In 2014, I was invited by Paul Hauser to represent him at a debate at the George Mason University. And the debater that I was having with is John Besnick. You may remember John Besnick. He represented the Department of Interior. There were 900 people in the audience. They were all basically environmental students from all over the country. They were invited by George Mason to come there. And at the conclusion of the debate, about three-fourths of the group voted that the dam shouldn't come out because there wasn't enough information to support removal of the dams. And there was a particular concern about the fish themselves, the salmon being a one species, a single species approach to this process of dam removal. Made no sense. Today, the Supreme Court of the United States, this is new information I have for everybody, today the Supreme Court of the United States handed down a decision in the Department of Agriculture versus Kurtz. And in that decision, and the legal pundits are looking at it now, but a lot of them have said this opens the door for lawsuits against federal and state agencies who have made incorrect decisions in these processes that we're witnessing now. So that door may be open for someone like the county or ourselves as citizens who are damaged by this process, which we all know here in this room, most of us, that the scientific facts don't support what's going on. And in fact, this is all a process to reach out and depopulate our area by going after the Scott and Shasta Rivers next, and this is the first step. Mr. Bonham's been at this for a long time, beginning with his leadership in the Trout Unlimited group as attorney for Trout Unlimited, and he's been in that process ever since. Thank you.
Thank you. Good job.
So, bring it back to the board. Supervisor Howe.
Thank you. Yeah, follow up on that. You know, I spent the bulk of my adult life professionally nurturing the Klamath, the salmon, and the Scott in the public lands and involved in the private lands as well. To see what I'm looking at right now just rips my heart up, honestly. It's unconscionable to me, without mitigation, that something like this is occurring. I've heard so much talk over the last 25 years about how important the native stocks are in our tributaries, but they're going to be dead. And that goes back to my concern about the trips. What in the world is your agency going to do to rebuild those populations when they're gone?
So let me start by saying that, you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, great. So there is a plan. We're working on a plan. We understand exactly what you're talking about. It's been a warm, wet winter. Chinook are already coming out of the gravels. We're already detecting in our rivers.
Exactly.
Rivers.
That's my point.
And we totally understand that. I don't have the plan in front of me right now. You know, we're still discussing that. We're also developing a plan for what to do with our hatchery fish when they're ready to be released as well. So. I will get that to you as soon as possible. I'll get you additional information on that. I just don't have what the staff are formulating in front of me right now.
Well,
I want to just say, hey, yeah. We understand exactly what you're saying.
I've never seen anything like this. You know, you're looking at a regional collapse of an ecosystem here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's that's what I see through my scientific training. And I talk about a fallback. That's what I want to know what the fallback is on this, because it has the effect of far reaching beyond the climate main stem to the rest of the region and the economy of the rest of the region.
Yeah, you know, let me just start off by just sort of addressing the idea that, you know, that this is a river of death, and that you know, everything that we're talking about today, the elevated suspended sediments, sediment content in the rivers, the loss of the reservoir fish as we transfer from a reservoir to a riverine system, these were all impacts that were, you know, analyzed, evaluated, put through an environmental review process, permitted, disclosed. So when people say we have no plan, you know, we have incredible restoration plans for the reservoir. We have restoration plans developed for the reservoirs with extensive planning. I think we heard over 1 million acorns, and I don't know how many million seeds that have been collected. So the impacts you're seeing out there were not something that were unexpected. As a matter of fact, I think that KRC and the agencies planned well in terms of developing restoration plans, providing them to the public, you know, during the FERC process. So a lot of things we're talking about today are understandably very upsetting, but I think at the same time, they were things that we have talked about, analyzed, discussed, and disclosed.
I understand that, and I don't want to diminish the impacts to COPCO, but the greater region is my concern. Mm-hmm. And with the sole focus on the main stem over there, with all those studies, and I have to correct you a little bit. I mean, I've been through all those studies, and they have been tailored, if you will, to limit a few things. You know, there's no mention of a lot of things in those. What about the sturgeon in the river? I mean, all I heard about for years was the 100-year-old sturgeon in the river. Are they going to survive? Is there any plan? Never seen them mentioned. You know, there's just so many questions in my mind that are just unanswered by the so-called science that's been done. The other thing that I wanted to bring up was with regard to money. You know, money in this project, we've been told money's no object, basically, to get this work done. And I can go back to when some of my employees worked on the Klamath Basin Fisheries Task Force. And I know the discussions that took place with the first EIS that came out and with the mitigation agreements. All that's been kind of flushed down the toilet. There were $250 million required in the TRIBS for restoration. What happened to it with the science? You know, did it all of a sudden in the last EIS disappear because it was no longer an issue, or was it just dismissed? You know, you may not have the answer to that. I'm talking to my constituents here, basically, you know, at this point. But those are my concerns. Those are my root concerns. Those are the things that rip my heart out every night. And I say, I'm serious as a heartbeat. I am scared to death about what's going on right now from a regional perspective. I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Supervisor Ober.
I get the mic without the mask. See, it doesn't even work.
Okay. I thought I was going to get lucky and get the one without the cord. I can tell you he's upset because he texts me at 4:30 in the morning. I have a lot of the same concerns. I still want to ask you the question about the plan of the hatchery fish and what you know about that and when they're going to be released and if they're going to be released anytime this year
and where
in our river.
And they are going to be released this year, and our fisheries program is working with our hatchery program to develop that final plan. It'll look at turbidity, it'll look at DO, it'll look at suspended sediment. They haven't finalized that plan, so I haven't seen that plan to be willing to talk to you about it. But as soon as it becomes finalized, I can also reach out to the board as soon as we get a timeline for when it's going to be finalized.
We've heard, this may be more of an observation than a question, but can you tell us what it looks like for an outlook of when this fishery, the salmon fishery, may come back into this river system?
So the goal is right now to use passive recolonization, you know, to allow the fish to take time to get to. So we're looking at evaluating it for about 10 to 12 years, you know, 3 to 4 cycles. And at that point, we'll get back together if it's not working out and figure out. But the intention and thought process is, you know, within 3 or 4 generations, that 10 to 12 years process, that fish will begin to come back and start utilizing both the main salmon and the tributaries.
That's great.
Anything further?
That
was talking about salmon.
What I said, yes.
Okay,
salmon.
Perfect. Yeah.
So, and that's begin to come back. So that's not when we're going to see, like, here comes the, you know, these aren't big numbers. We're going to begin to see things regenerate.
Well, I think that's an unknown, because, you know, every year we have fish, you know, banging at the bottom of Iron Gate, wanting to go higher. You know, and so we will also be operating the Fall Creek, not the Fall Creek Hatchery, the Fall Creek Hatchery for an additional 8 years. So that'll be there as well. It'll continue to produce Chinook salmon and coho salmon. We did give the presentation, I think, at the last supervisor's meeting, so I don't have the exact numbers in front of me. So.
And that, is anybody looking at, like, the international fishery and what that does to determine, you know, what our fisheries look like?
So, that's a separate process from my program, the whole looking at marine fisheries, in-stream, developing regulations. Developing in-stream regulations. I don't actually do that part.
Because that does have an impact on what returns to our river system.
Yeah, the commercial fishery, the recreational fishery. And I can follow up more, get more information on you, or perhaps get somebody to talk about how that's all figured out. I just don't have that information.
That would be helpful.
Okay.
Thank you.
Supervisor Valenzuela?
Yeah, just one. So there was obviously a deer stuck in the mud. You said, would you consider what you guys did an immediate response to that event? In other words, bringing in more resources to prevent that?
You know, I think the first deer being stuck in the mud, we did have resources out there. We had our game wardens. They cover a large amount of area. We also have, they're not district biologists anymore, but they're district biologists. They cover district, like, part of Siskiyou County and part of MoDoc. You know, and we also have our wildlife interaction biologists. So between them, the time we get a call, you know, we can respond fairly quickly. Mm-hmm. I think in this instance, because we understand the importance of the deer and we want to respond, we provided even more staffing to be able to respond as quick as possible, as well as the daily patrols that we're doing along the edges of Kapu.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought I understood that this was not unexpected, something like this would happen.
You know, there was always an expectation that the wildlife would be interacting with the mud.
Okay.
You know, I think the deer right away was probably unexpected that it would happen so quickly. You know, I think the fact that we haven't had any of the impacts since then, and I'm not a wildlife biologist per se, but what we probably had is a situation where you had more of a residential deer population around Kopko. You know, you see me driving around the front lawns. There's still 8 or 9 that are over there at the end of Kopko Lake. It must be Kopko Village. So they're still over there. And so, you know, during the initial drawdown, those deer are probably the deer that if they get spooked, they're going to head towards the reservoir. And in this instance, they did, and it's very unfortunate. But since then, you know, we haven't seen the wildlife in distress or stuck in the mud, and we haven't had any calls, you know, to our line that we man 7 days a week and check over the weekend. So.
Okay, thank you. Supervisor Chris?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Question I have, some questions on the hatchery in this production, but I understand you're still looking at stuff up. Fish Bulletin 150 said some stuff, but there's more, I know, to it. Mm-hmm. The amount of fish that were produced originally at Fall Creek Hatchery. A question from the public was, access points to the river. So the Parcel B lands, Wildlife Conservation Board will be purchasing those and then that will be transferred over. What's the plan for access for locals around here for accessing the lake, the river?
So if I heard the question, correctly, I have not heard that WCB was purchasing parcel A lands, which are a separate set of lands that is not the reservoir footprint. I think it's what Pacific Corp is intending to keep. What we're going to get, or an entity is going to get, is the parcel B lands, which is the reservoir footprints and sort of the hydroelectric region reach. And that will either come to us or another entity. As the board has, you know, identified, you wrote a letter in terms of the Shasta Indian Nation being that potential entity. There are other entities out there. And at that time, you know, we'll be working with whoever's moving forward, but we can't really talk about access or management because we don't even know who that future entity is yet. But I do want to point out what, just once again, and I went through it fairly quick. I'm super not super great with bullets, as you probably noticed when I read the first part of my discussion today. But, you know, we are going to be putting a recreational site at Fall Creek. We'll have one at Iron Gate, and we're also going to expand the Copco Day Use area. And those will be on Parcel B lands, but they will be open to the public. And I guarantee the department's probably going to be maintaining those unless another entity would like to take that over. So, and those will be open to the public.
I share the concern of my colleagues for the tributaries, for them not taking the bulk of criticism, you know, if there is a form of out-migration or in-migration. I'll leave that at that. For the fishery number, opening up all these potential miles of habitat, there has to be an end number, an end goal. And you heard me say this at the Klamath ESA meetings.
I think I got to answer this. Ask this question at my first special board meeting for by the board. And the answer is, you know, right now we just don't know because unfortunately we don't know what it's going to look like. You know, when the river gets to where it is, we start seeing how much spawning gravel's there, well, how much rearing habitat's available, how that's going to change over the next 3 to 4 years. So I just simply can't give you a number of we're good at 7,500 or we think there's going to be 10,000 utilizing this or 400 in Shovel Creek right now.
Yeah, I know that's a big number because, you know, for entities, it's this ever-perfection.
Oh, absolutely.
Ever-perfection of one more, two more. So it could be, there's a point where that number has to acquiesce to what can be accomplished. The last question I have is in regards to the revegetation. This would be a sweet spot, unfortunately, for a canyon fire. There's, I believe, 3 volunteer firefighters on the COPCO fire department.
Four.
Awesome, you guys. So four firefighters from the COPCO fire department. Easily 2 could be gone. So those fuel breaks and the maintenance of those fuel breaks could be critical. Because by the time Hornbrook will get up here, or Cal Fire Hornbrook, it's a bit of a drive and safety reasons.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, I would,
the vegetation management and fuel breaks and maintenance of those vegetations.
And I would probably answer this more of less of a parcel B question, but more of a landscape level question, knowing that, you know, fuel breaks have to be placed strategically in order for them to be successful.
Yeah.
So, you know, if there's planning going on or discussions or already a, you know, fuel reduction fuel break map that's out there or a fire safe council, you know, that can provide additional information to the department about where there would be suitable fuel breaks, and if they were included in part of Parcel B lands, we can include that in our discussions with entities as well as we keep it as a state. And I don't know what type of fuel break. If you're talking about just defensible space behind people's homes at 60 feet and it's mowed grass, or if you're talking in actually like a shaded fuel break where you're just removing all the trees under 8 inches DBH and limbing everything up and removing all the understory. So I think what I'm trying to say is I think there's a larger discussion there. I think we just need to get more information from the people that are concerned about what the fuel break issue is.
All right. I'll probably ask that question in the next presentation, too. All right. Thanks, Mr. Harris.
Mr. Harris, are there any adult fish, steelhead, salmon in the system right now that are being harmed from what's taking place?
Yeah, if there were steelhead in the system right now, and there's steelhead in the system, you know, I think as it was identified, you know, there were lethal and sublethal effects to fish downstream of Iron Gate and COPCO during, you know, the drawdown process.
And so,
but oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
So I'd like to also just identify that, going back to the river of death concept, and understanding that I am not denying, the department's not denying that, of course, during drawdown, incredible bottom of sediment was released, there was DO issues. But at the same time, there's so many tributaries that have the tributary confluence where fresh water is coming in the fishing get into. They can get into the actual tributaries themselves. So at a time when I know you see the water and it's brown and it's got an odor to it and everything like that, also keep in mind that there is refugia all the way down the system where not only juvenile fish, but adult fish can get into during this time period. And also as fish are coming out of the gravels, coming out of places like the Shasta and Scott,
You can pull it up too if you want. Pull it out.
Coming out of the systems, you know, the same instincts that say, hey, I need to get into fresh water and I'm sensing it over here. The juvenile fish that are coming out of the tributaries right now in the Shasta Scott, if they're, you know, first of all, we're counting them in our rotor screw traps. That doesn't mean they're actually exiting the system. But if they're getting there towards the mouth, that same instinct is probably going to tell them, I don't want to go into that. So they're probably kegging up in that area right now. So we're trying to figure out ways to determine that with our...
Are you monitoring that?
We are monitoring it. We're trying to figure out how you would monitor because we have a rotary screw trap.
Right.
And so we run it every day and it catches fish. But the Bismarck Brown, which is a dye you put on the fish so that you can do recapture methodology where you take some fish, you put them above the rotary screw trap, and you get efficiency to then do a population estimate, it doesn't last long enough. So we don't know if we're catching the same fish that are circling around. So we're trying to figure out a way to do that so we can effectively come up with a population estimate. So
okay. There isn't a smolt release going out currently?
There will be a coho smolt release from Falkirk Hatchery.
About when?
I want to say that's May. It goes back to that table. I forgot that we don't have cell phone coverage that I'll get. And then just so you're aware, it's in Chelsea's mailbox. I also did send the draft regulations for the proposed fishing that's going in front of the Fish and Game Commission meeting, which is consistent with the presentation I think we gave like 3 or 4 board meetings ago with Morgan.
And is Cal Fish and Wildlife monitoring water quality?
You know, we're not monitoring water quality other than we have, you know, DO meters, not DO, we have temperature meters like on our rotary screw traps and stuff, as well as temperature sensors throughout the system. But we don't typically measure suspended sediment or anything like that. And we're not measuring or looking at heavy metals either.
So the 5 new positions that have been put on the Klamath, are any of those available to be doing something like that, because this is kind of a once in a lifetime event?
I am of the understanding that the amount of monitoring that's going on between the USGS gauging stations, the 8 grab samples, the samples that are also being taken by RES as part of the Klamath renewal efforts is pretty extensive. So I don't know what additional information we would be gathering.
Are you getting that information?
We get that information provided to us through the Aquatic Resources Group. We're not seeing the raw data yet, but we do get updates in terms of what the expected conditions will be, what they are, how DO has looked at different points in the river.
Okay. And so how are we doing with the negotiation with Chelsea for the county and the no harm clause, as I guess where I'm looking for, that 3 years hence, if there's no returning spawners, that those in our area won't be held responsible for that.
Right, that is there. We're drafting a response. It's coming to the county, and it should be here.
Okay.
It's moving forward.
Okay. And with regard to what Supervisor Chris brought up about the end goal, I understand you don't have that yet, but is that equation being placed in planning?
In terms of what type of planning?
An end goal, 500 fish, whatever it is, 1,000 fish, we're done.
You know, I don't have the answer to that question in terms of...
Understood, but I mean, is that part of the equation of what's going on in planning future?
I think it's too early to know what we would be planning for about available
active. I don't want a number.
I think we all would be able to map out. If we had access, you know, we could figure out how much spawning available, rearing habitat there was.
I'm just hoping it's part of the dialogue.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Definitely.
All right. And then lastly, are you potentially going to truck some of these smolts out?
You know, that's part of that discussion that's going on right now that Supervisor Ogren asked about that plan, what we're going to do. Obviously, you know, water quality conditions, DO, suspended sediment, temperature will help drive that discussion.
Okay. I have one more public comment from Crystal. I think it's Maxwell. Is that right?
In the meantime, is it possible somebody can close the drapes? I'm getting blinded.
Let me be useful for you, Wendy.
There you go, thank you. That's better, thank you.
Hi, Crystal Maxwell from Kopko Lake. So far, I got here, like I said, later today. So far, almost every speaker has been making it sound a lot less disastrous than it is. Just like he just was talking about the deer or a deer. The first ones that I knew of that were killed was a mom and a baby. Okay, so it wasn't just one. There's been multiples. The other day I heard 7 gunshots in a row. Next thing you know, here goes fishing game. So they're killing left and right. It's not just one or two things. It's a lot. And it really is irritating that Fish and Game, that are supposed to be taking care of these animals, did not have the audacity to put out water for them. They are going to need water to live. So obviously they are going to go through the mud so they can get to the water. That's why they're dying, because you didn't prevent it when you should have. Greg Jeter cut these barrels, and we put water out for them. And it's not just like 9, you know, like was mentioned, 8 or 9 deer around here. We have, no kidding, in our yard, 10 to 15 morning and night, okay? And usually you see deer all over. I have seen 2 deer in the past week that I can honestly say I've seen. But it's really irritating that it was not, that's supposed to be their priority is wildlife, and the one thing they need, water, was not put out there. That we had to do it. And also, why is no one being prepared for this meeting? You guys keep asking for data, and I'm not here. It's always, oh, I can't get to, I don't know that. And this is what we've been going through for years. Some of these people have been fighting this for 25 years, and I've only been here almost 4 years, and I can honestly say I have not gotten answers to 75% of my questions. So I don't understand why this project was even gone through when they can't even answer simple questions.
Thank you. Donnie, is it Fontaine, maybe? I'm not.
Danny.
I'm sorry.
Danny Fontaine, Kopko Lake resident. My question was about the parcel B lands that you mentioned. You said it's a possibility that they could be transferred eventually from the state to another entity. And my question is, couldn't it be possible in that transfer that there is a clause that they can't disallow public access in the transfer of it? And I plan on, I'll go down there anyway, I don't care, but it's just, it's an open-ended, kind of causes some insecurity with the residents out here not knowing what will happen with it. Mm-hmm. It's just undetermined. So I was just wondering if in the transfer if there could be a clause that they have to allow public access.
Okay, thank you. Sure.
Okay.
Back to you. We're going to move on to the next item.
Okay, great. Yeah, you guys are probably tired of me. I apologize for talking so much. But just the two questions that were just brought up, just slightly. I just go to the parcel B's first. You know, the California Natural Resource Agency is leading that effort, but I can pass that information on regarding that. The second regarding the deer, and, you know, I don't want people to think that anybody in the department, we didn't get into this profession because we don't like Fish and Wildlife Resources. And I don't want anybody in the room to think that the loss of a deer isn't important to the department or the 10 deer is somehow inconsequential. That being said, you know, this is deer winter range, and deer are unevenly distributed across this entire landscape, thousands of acres, utilizing different habitats. There's additional water sources from all the tributaries and other locations. So I just want people to understand that we see deer here, but they're also spread throughout this entire area. And when the EIR looked at, you know, wildlife impacts, one of the things it identified as a long-term benefit of this project was the increase of over 1,400 acres of winter deer habitat, and also the increased habitat connectivity and corridor connectivity that deer that are moving to and from this area will be able to utilize now that the large locations, the reservoirs. So, thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Harris. We're going to move on to item 4F, Office of Emergency Services.
Good afternoon, Board of Supervisors. Brian Schoening, Director of Emergency Services for Siskiyou County. So I was asked to speak today on behalf of the whole kind of what we've been doing. So we've been taking a very proactive approach pre, during, and post project. We've worked alongside of KRRC with their emergency action plan to help develop any pieces that were really needed and any shortfalls that we saw. One of the limiting factors that we did see is that we, as in the basically in our world, sheriff, fire, emergency management, we have a very set jargon that we speak. So we worked with that team and the contractors to build a user-friendly FEMA ICS course, so 100, 200, giving them the basic idea of what we do and how we talk and what is required from us once a call goes over the radio. So we worked with them. Along with that, we were all able to help really set forth what we needed to see in the emergency action plan or the EAP. So that was a critical point that we saw basically pre, during, and this will also move to the post as well. One thing for the community is that the evacuation protocols have always been a top priority for us through warning and alerts, updating any of our Zone Haven / Genesis products that we use, and then one of the new things that we were able to do alongside that is with AI is to help identify any of the roads that have been damaged or changed, any area. So the whole idea that the lake is no longer there, that's been a huge access point for us with AI and developing that. So that's been something very important to us. And then also another product that we use for the county is ArcGIS. So the floodplain mapping has been very important for us. So understanding those estimations that we need to look at, but also knowing that FEMA, who's in charge of that, is going to do post-dam removal floodplain mapping. So with AI, we were able to do a lot of estimating right now, especially with the coming months and the coming winter, especially with these atmospheric rivers. So that's where Siskiyou County OES is at, understanding that there is a concern. We're treating this just like we would with any other part of our county. So it's something that is on our radar. We've made sure that our plans are updated, our emergency action plans within the county are updated, and then we are also in a hazard mitigation plan rewrite, and we will be reaching out to the county as well, or I'm sorry, to the residents here, as well with the fire department to understand that there's going to be some changes as well.
Okay.
Pending any questions, I'll bring up Sheriff LaRue.
So let's bring up Sheriff LaRue, and then I'll go to the public comment on this subject.
I was told I have to fix these blinds first. I could get the cracks? Okay. Thank you, Chairman.
Sheriff LaRue, can you hear me? Good,
yes.
Back there?
Okay. I know this microphone's a little finicky. A couple things. I wanted to just let everyone know here that, you know, I've said this before during fires. Everyone has a unique story, and it's something that keeps me up at night. Because, you know, as sheriff, but just as a fellow human being, you know, I care for you and what you're going through. And it's hard to kind of understand all the things because I know there's so much going on. But you do have a network of support in the county. You have your supervisors, you have staff, and then you have the sheriff's office. And so don't ever think that you can't reach out to us, no matter what. So we're here for you. I want you to know that, and I want that to be real between us. Because we have to live through this, not the exact same, but we can get through this together. So with that, I think that one of the biggest challenges that I'm hearing, and at least for me, has been communication. Hasn't been the best with, I want to say, you know, and again, this isn't out of disrespect, but with the folks at KRRC and those that are involved, it's been hard to get clear messages, not only to my staff, but just to the, you know, fellow community members. And so, if you're still here and you're hearing me, better communication would be very helpful in trying to get information out so that people don't have all these questions and feel as though they're not being heard. So I hear you. I understand exactly the frustration. So it does appear to be a little bit sloppy for my taste in keeping up with current events. And so the sheriff's office has a lot of components to it. Public safety is a big one. We'll talk a little bit about traffic, or I will. But, you know, what's unique, I think, about the sheriff's office is we have to deal with so many different things. The things that keep me up, the things that keep everybody up, is the things about the animals. And granted, we have our other departments here, Fish and Wildlife, but for me, I have to think about animals. I think about flooding. I think about fires, anything natural disaster related. I think about your livelihood, your property. I think about how long it's going to take to see things change. I think about fish now. So the reason I throw all that out there is because even though, you know, the sheriff's office think of we arrest people, but we do a lot more than that. And so all that out there, you know, we have to process and figure out how we can better serve everyone here and in this community. And so I don't always get the information answered the same way that you guys don't. So I feel for you there. But I want you to know the thing that I'm frustrated with you as well. And I'm not supportive of this. And in a sense, it doesn't really matter what I think. But I'm throwing that out there because I think it's important that you know that. But I don't want anything to be restricted for you when it comes to public right-of-ways, public roads. And so just recognize that I have to filter everything, whether it's requests from the folks that from KRRC and beyond. I want to make sure it doesn't infringe on anything. Okay, there are property issues that we've discussed a little bit here, but also recognize that I don't believe in shutting roads down unless the only time we would do that is if it's, you know, an evacuation scenario, God forbid. But I'm not going to play the game of, in a sense, being weaponized as law enforcement to sort of, you know, shut down a project, because you have a right to be in public places. So just remember that. There are some concerns, though, with regard to the property, such as the mud. So aside from all of the, you know, legal aspects of this, I just want you guys to be sure that you understand that I don't want you guys getting hurt or getting stuck or beyond, whether it's mud or anything else. So safety first. So just keep that in your minds as you're out and about. And if you do see something that's dangerous, please report it to us. Because I can get that either to the right people. Because again, we don't want anything to be compromised with regard to safety. No matter who's at fault, we don't want anybody getting hurt. So that's the primary thing. So I heard a few things earlier about crimes. So if you see something, whether it's vandalism or theft, please report it to us, because we will respond. The issue will always be, is do we know about it? Sometimes people don't call us. So just recognize that. Sometimes we don't hear these reports, whether it's vandalism or theft. So please help us out and report that. One thing regarding traffic, the California Highway Patrol, which is here, not to put them on the spot, but they're great partners and they do help us tremendously. So traffic on county roads is primarily handled by them. We work very closely with them, but just recognize that if there are traffic complaints, they go through their office, and we can help with that. We'll help facilitate that. Doesn't mean that we don't handle traffic and can't do it. It just happens to be their primary jurisdiction, if that makes sense. So we want to make sure we get them involved as well. That's why I said they're really good partners. Because if there are unsafe vehicles, whether it's speeding or people stopped in the roadway, it doesn't matter who it is. We need to know about them so we can address them with the right people and have better conversations. Because again, we don't want people getting hurt. So I could probably go on and on, but the main thing, we're a full service sheriff's office, so we're here for you, and we want to make sure that you're safe. I work very close with Brian, of course, Cal Fire, to ensure that during emergencies, whether it's again fire, flood, and beyond, that we are good collaborators and partner to make sure that people get out safely. And we do a great job at that, and we always have you in mind. So with that, I will go.
Thank you. So if you two want to just kind of hang out there, I've got a couple of public comments. Theo, Eric is here?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. And do you want to speak to the next item as well, or just this one?
I'm not, whichever it pertains to.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm Erica Salvestro. I'm the principal slash superintendent at...
You can pull it off there as well if it's easier.
Okay. I'm the principal slash superintendent at Bogus Elementary. There's a school out here. And my concern is the big rigs on the road at the same time as our school bus. Poor Tom Dean. I've been bugging him at the county office, and I've called sheriff and highway patrol and contacted KRRC. But unfortunately, it's been since the beginning of the school year. Started with the dredging machines, then just, I mean, all kinds of big rigs. And what's happened is our bus has gotten run off the road countless times with children on it. We've lost mirrors, tires. It's just really scary for the kids. And we have parents who won't send kids on the bus anymore. And we've tried, but we always kind of get the runaround. Oh, it's the contractors. Well, can I get a contact for the contractors? Well, we can't give that out. So I'm not really sure who to address it to or where it should, the complaint should go. But I do know like log trucks aren't allowed on roads during certain hours. So we're just kind of asking that same law be applied to the big rigs out here. Because as everyone drove up here, it's not a great road. There's no painted lines past the school. And our bus does come all the way up here. And so it just is it's a big safety issue for our kids. So we were just asking that big rigs are off the road from 7:30 to 8:30 and 2:30 to 3:30 while our bus is on the road.
Thank you. Chrissy, I had you down for this one.
I'm good.
Okay. I'm sorry.
We still have
Cal Fire.
Oh, yes. So next we have
Cal Fire.
No, not Cal Fire. Local Fire.
Oh, local fire. Okay.
And then Cal Fire.
Before you come up, though, do either one of you want to address what we just heard? That's a first for me. So that's kind of concerning. And
it is very concerning. Yes. So I will speak with CHB before we leave and find out a game plan, because yes, that's super unsafe and dangerous. We shouldn't be having that. As far as the timelines and things with time frames, we'll look into that more specifically. But yes, we want to make sure that people, again, are safe. So
right.
I'll address that.
Okay, thank you.
I just interject, because I was under the impression that all the construction was on the other, was on Copco Road, not Agri-Beswick, and I believe the school was on Agri-Beswick, if I'm not mistaken. And I will tell you this, my previous telephone experience, people always go flying through that road. And I've been almost run off the road back in the day, so I want to say it's not construction traffic, it's more a lot of everyone else's traffic.
Erica, are you still here?
But maybe maybe someone from the KRC or whatever can validate that. Yeah, because
Well,
she mentioned big rigs.
I will say, regardless of where the vehicles are from, it's still an issue, and we'll address it.
Okay. All right. Chief Gill.
Hello, I'm Francis Gill. I'm the fire chief of Kopko Lake Community and also one of the board members of the community club. A lot of the stuff I was actually going to talk about has been touched on already by the sheriff. The construction traffic, just to shed a little light, some of it is trees inc, which aren't related to the project, but they have a heavy presence out here right now. And then as far as the project vehicles parked along the road, it's not necessarily work-related. It's like an overflow parking situation on one corner of Patricia. And unfortunately, it's one of the worst corners on Patricia. It's a very tight corner and a very narrow corner. And when they're parking their vehicles there, they do have a tendency to leave about a quarter of the vehicle out in the roadway on that corner. So. But that's something we can probably talk to the Yurok tribe about, because it's at that specific location, and they're part of the re-veg crew, so they have a lot of people working there now. But it is a really bad parking place. It's pretty sketchy. Big rigs and stuff, I mean, with the wells, on Patricia, the issue we have with the wells, there have been some trucks coming up, water trucks, semis going up and down Patricia. Between them, Trees Inc., the spectators coming out to the lake, there is a lot of vehicle in the roadway situations happening right now. So I don't know that it's necessarily like a law enforcement situation, but it's definitely a public safety issue for us. So it's something that needs to be addressed either by the community or in collaboration with the Sheriff's Department and the Highway Patrol. And then I wanted to talk about the mud, which you touched on. Just some word that you can spread to people is there is virtually no public access to Kopko Lake. Almost everything is through private property. So just please don't trespass on people's property to try to access the reservoir footprint. Please definitely do not go driving out there right now. There are some trainings and equipment that's being acquired for mud rescues, but there's only one or two helicopters available to show up for a hoist. You get out in that cold mud and you're out there for an hour or two, you're going to be hypothermic. It's going to be a serious situation. So please try not to go out into the mud. That's all we can ask too, especially not with your vehicles. And then if anybody sees wildlife, there are numbers to call. They've been posted on Facebook, but you guys can always call me if there's any issues with wildlife, or the Sheriff's Department, or CAL FIRE. I'm trying to think what else.
Is Mallard Cove still an LZ?
Oh, thank you. So what I'd like to ask the supervisors for help with is Mallard Cove launch ramp has always been one of our primary landing zones for medevac helicopter landings. The state's plan right now is to remove that entire, to remove that entire area. And without it, we don't have a central location to land helicopters. We'll basically have here behind the firehouse or all the way up at the top of what they call Portagee Hill. So that landing zone is a strategically placed landing zone. And so maybe I can get the county's help in contacting the right people for the state.
And who's shutting it down, per se?
Well, it's part of the state property because it's below the high water line.
Okay.
And so their intention, so it's parcel, the last we heard is...
Parcel
to,
B.
Yeah. And the last we heard was the intention was to just, you know, disassemble that area and return it to the wild or whatever. So that would be a strategic medical evacuation area for us.
Chelsea, you picked that up. And Mr. Harris, did you pick that up as well? Thank you. Okay.
If there's no other questions, that's all I have.
Okay.
Thank you.